Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Come on, son.
There we go. Come on, son. It's the podcast, and it's my 200th episode of my podcast, and I want to thank Combat Jack, as usual, for getting me into this podcasting in the first place. But I thought for my 200th episode, I would do something very, very special. And this is special to me because these are the guys that had a large part in molding my life and shaping my life and helping me to become the media person that I am. And we had a lot of good years together doing a lot of great things. So ladies and gentlemen out there listening to the Kibbutz Podcast, welcome T-Money and Dr. Dre. Yo!
What's up?
What's good? What are you guys doing? T, how are you, sir?
I am doing well, my friend. And how are you?
I'm doing good, brother. Doc, how are you, sir?
Hey, man, I'm just searching to find the one.
I feel you, brother.
There you go.
You sound like the rest of us. Let me start off by asking you both a question, and you can answer it individually or collectively, if you like. I don't know if y'all know each other's brains like that. How did you two meet? How did y'all meet each other? Let's take this back before you're on TV Raps.
So who should start, me or Dre? Let me take it. So I was in a special class. This lady named Miss Bundy, our fifth grade class in elementary school.
Did you say special class?
No, I said I was in a special class, not special class.
Not special class.
It was me, it was you, it was a bunch of people. We had a nice class going. We had things happening. Miss Bundy, I think she taught English. Am I correct? So
no, Miss Bundy just taught fifth grade class. We weren't broken up in fifth grade. We were still in one class at a time.
Well, I'm glad that you corrected that, because I can't remember that far back. So this
is why we're
both answering the question.
He said special class.
So let's go back to Miss Bundy. Well, you've been a special class for quite some time, but we won't get into
absolutely
that. but anyway, listen, so we met in fifth grade at the sum it up. We had a class project that we had to put together, and we exchanged gifts. And since then, we've been best of friends.
Dr. Dre, how'd you meet T-Money? I know you got a different version.
But it is definitely, because it definitely was a special class. We were in fifth grade at our school, fifth and sixth grade school called Park Avenue. And T's right, we exchanged Christmas presents in Miss Bundy's class. And the thing about it was, T was always very cool, calm, and collected. We picked our names out of a hat. And me, I just loved to get involved with all the little girls at the time. And they used to just beat me up. So that's how we met.
Okay, so y'all met in the fifth or sixth grade now. T, when you met Dre, was he Dr. Dre yet, or was he Andre?
Oh, he was Andre Brown. That's who he was.
How did you come about the moniker Dre of Dr. Dre?
Well, that's simple. It had to do with playing basketball. I used to go to all the New York Nets games at the Nassau Coliseum in Uniondale. And I eventually became a ball boy for the New York Nets, who became champions of the ABA. And there was one player that was outstanding who came from Roosevelt, Long Island, named Julius Dr. J. Irving. So I emulated my basketball style after him. So as we went into junior high and we were coming up with names, and I'm playing basketball, I just adopted the name Dr. Dre. from playing basketball?
From Dr. J, of course, NBA Hall of Famer Dr. Dre. And T-Money, yes. How did you come up with the name T-Money? And were there any other names before T-Money?
Yeah, there was a name that I hated. I used to be called Cool Kels T.
That was my DJ name.
But I had no other choice. I didn't make that name. Or somebody gave me, they called me Kelsey because I played sports and they called me Kels for my last name all the time. Kels. So I said, well, let me see if Cool Kels T worked. That did not get over with the chicks. That was not working. So I had to change it to something current, which was, okay, let's see what happens. So at the time, everybody was called Money, you know, D Money, C Money. So I just decided to name myself T Money. And that stuck, actually. So it worked out for me.
Once again, I love T's memory, but a little off. T got this belt buckle. Remember when you used to get the belt buckles with the letters in your, and you know, you put on? And he got this shiny buckle and put T Money on it. And everybody thought that was so cool. But when we went to get the sweatshirts on Jamaica Avenue, he put Cool Kels T on the back, which I always thought it was kind of cool because I said, Cool Kels T, interesting. But when he got the T Money belt buckle,
a moniker is a personal thing. And that so was not working at the end of the day. So I decided to change it. Yeah. That's why I got the name belt T-Money off the avenue. You remember, Ed, the ones with the frames and shit?
I had one that said Eddie D on it. Absolutely.
That's right. I was rocking that today. And then I had the short one that just had the dollar sign. I had a lot of them shit. You know, rock them in your Lee jeans. I stay fresh, you know me.
I had one of those belt buckles, but when I went to snap it together, it popped off and all the letters fell out. So I said, this isn't going to work.
So, Dre, you had the cheesy version of the belt buckle, huh?
That's right.
No, I just wore a sweatshirt.
Okay. All right. So Cool Kels T developed into T Money, and Andre Brown developed into Dr. Dre. When did you guys start DJing together? When did you guys start forming groups and DJing together?
Well, I'll let Dre take the helm on this one. Then I'll come back after him.
Well, Ed, I had a whole plethora of names before I got to Dr. Dre as a DJ. Because back in the day, and you might remember this, everybody used to put DJ in front of your last name or your first name or your middle name. So in the beginning, I was called DJ Brown. And I was like, That's not DJ Brown.
Don't sound too good.
See how that works? DJ Brown was not what you wanted, right? So you changed it.
And the crazy part is I put it on a t-shirt and somebody said, yo, DJ Brown. I said, that's not working. T-shirt going away. I started DJing with my cousin Warren, you know, RIP to him, loved him. He used to be a part of one of the biggest DJ groups in Westbury, who used to DJ at the Kazura Youth Center, and the guy's name was called Donovan. But, you know, as everything goes, guys break up for whatever reasons, or Donovan was going off, and my cousin was getting ready to become a Marine. So he said, yo, you need to DJ, come on, let's start DJing. So I went and I got some Lafayette turntables, 1200s. They were these brown belt-driven turntables and a Lafayette mixer with a knob that you use as a crossfade, and it had 6 mic channels. And that's how I started DJing. But then I started hanging out with all these other DJs around the way, my man Stanley Bull, Andre Williams, and my brother Fred was a DJ, but he was in college at the time, but he didn't have 2 turntables like that. We used to take the stereo and use the switch, the A and B switch, and put one turntable on A and the other turntable on B. So when you went to switch between records, you basically guessed, going click, 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 back and forth. So T was trying to DJ and he got himself some speakers and he actually got some Technique turntables, some belt driven, I think they were called 220s, T?
Yeah, that was the 220s, you got it.
They were the 220s and he had a Neumark mixer. And I was like, wow. And T came over to my house one day and he's like, yo, what are these? I said, it's my turntables. He said, Dre, you can't DJ like that.
Let me tell you the backstory on that. Those were the worst turntables. As a matter of fact, I don't think you had matching turntables. They were 2 different shits, right?
No. The first ones were 2 different ones.
Yeah, 2 different ones.
But they were the ones where when the needle went too far, it would automatically go back. So then I went, my father took me to Lafayette. Sure.
That wasn't gonna work, man.
So we kept spinning the record, the turntable real fast, so the needle would stay in place. So my father went and he thought he was on the cutting edge. I said, Dad, I need some techniques. And he said, I'll take you to get some techniques. And he said, here, pick these out. And that's before, how I got the Lafayette.
Those were better before I had the 220s. I used to, you ever see, you had the, Ed, in your house, did you ever have the home stereo that doubled as like the TV?
Yeah, TV and stereo system, yeah.
My man, I DJed on that as one turntable, and I had the other turntable on top of it with the volume control. That's how I DJed in my house for parties with my mother and them. It was crazy. And then my father said, you can't keep doing this. You want a DJ, I'll help you. So he purchased me, you know, my father's a hardworking man. So he purchased me the 220s and the Neumann mixer. So I thought I was fly. I was in a group called Warp Factor 2. Do you remember Warp Factor 2?
Yep. With Kevin Shoulders Meeks.
Kevin Meeks.
Mr. Shoulders.
And his crew that I wound up having beef with. I snuffed one of the kids and then I left that group. And
Warp
I got with
Factor 2. Now, how old are we talking around this time?
Oh, man, what are we in? Oh, wow. We're in eighth grade, right.
And this is
right around the time I was carrying records for Master Sounds and Chief Sapphire.
Exactly.
Right around that time when you had to really kind of do something before you can get down with a crew. Now, Drake, let's take it back to this mixer you have. You said you had a knob mixer. That wouldn't happen to have been a GLI mixer, would it?
No, not the GLI. This was a Lafayette. I told you my father took me to Lafayette. Which used to be a big electronics store.
This gave you everything, Lafayette.
GLI was fancy, and he had nothing fancy.
So, Dre, the first time you saw a mixer or even DJ, let's say DJed on a mixer with cue control where you can hear the other side while one side's playing, was that T-Money's mixer that he brought over, his Neumark's mixer?
No. My first mixer was a Lafayette mixer. You could hear back and forth, but it was switches. Rather than a slide fade.
Yeah.
The slide fade was the microphone.
Yeah, the Neumark mixer had the slide fade and the slide cue.
And what I used to take the knob, which I kept that mixer for the longest too. And it worked. It was technically a mic mixer, but it had two auxiliaries which you could plug your turntables into. So my father, because we went to Crazy Eddie. Prices were insane. And when my father saw the price of buying turntables and a mixer, he said, no, that's not going to happen. So he went to Lafayette and he saw turntables and this mixer. And the guy was like, oh, super, super salesman. And you know, when your father's taking you there and you're looking at him, you're going, Dad, this isn't right. This isn't what they're DJing with. Oh, no, what do you know? It's two turntables. It works just fine. And the guy was like over exuberant on the sale because it was also over exuberant about being cheap. So I got that. And like I said, I had to make it work.
I wouldn't say cheap. I would just say that at that time they had families to feed and they weren't making a whole lot of money and they were doing the best that they can. So we kind of got the best that they can, right?
My father was
being cheap.
You know your dad better than I do, bro. So tell me something. Let's speed it up a little bit from DJ Brown and Cool Kels T to now Dr. Dre and T Money from what is it called in the group? T Warp 2?
Warp Factor 2.
Warp Factor 2. How did original concept come into play?
Oh, that's still a long ways away. Because we had when we became concept.
We were about 12
different iterations from the concept till we got in high school. What happened was everybody on the block wanted to DJ because we, like you said, used to carry records for Keith Sadler. I had a half a crate of records. T had another quarter crate of records. And we were carrying stereo systems around to DJ with. So
Let me tell Ed this one quick story, right? Our first party that we DJed, which was a couple blocks away from Dre's crib, right? We had how many records did we have, Dre? Like 7-8 records, and we played the same record the whole night. Remember Hot Shot?
We played Karen Hot Shot, Young
Shot. Yo,
Evelyn Champagne.
We played the same record the whole night, because we didn't have no other records.
I like to applaud y'all, man, because at the time, I ran around with Keith Sadler and Master Sounds, who lived around the corner from me. And Keith had about 25, 30 crates of records, and that was our job to load all the records up. So applaud to you gentlemen for playing a party with seven records.
We had seven records, bro. And the we had Spoonie G, we had that record, Hot Shot, and everybody liked that. We played it every other fucking time. This Hot Shot. And then we didn't have no slip mats. That shit just fucking was winning. Oh, he was ill.
I think the young lady there was Karen Young, wasn't it? It was Karen Young.
Yes. Something like that.
Yeah, on a gray and red label. I remember that song.
Yeah, gray and black or gray and red, yeah.
Gray and black or gray and red label. Yeah, absolutely.
So going fast forward, as we started to progress, T came over and said, you can't use these rubber mats. You got to get a slip mat. And we got some material, and T cut it out on a 12-inch, and he put it on there. And I started going, whoa, this is better than what we were doing, because now the record's not gripping to the turntable. So we started practicing, going back and forth to each other's house. T had the 220s at his house. I had that, and I had them on my dresser in my bedroom. And I was accumulating records every time my brother came home from college. That's when we used to have a whole bunch of records, because my brother had about 12 crates of records. So when he went to school, he couldn't take them all. And then you get mad. Don't touch my records.
Oh, absolutely.
Don't take them out of my house.
Yes. Then you weren't allowed to touch
what
your big brother's records,
that.
For sure.
You know what you do with that? Does that. You take the hot records and you bring them back.
Absolutely. You might bring them back scratch too. So let's jump forward to the concept crew. I'm assuming by the time you guys got to the concept crew, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you already established as Dr. Dre and you were already T-Money.
Absolutely.
No, we still didn't use Dr. Dre as a DJ. And he was Kool Kelz T for a period.
I wasn't Kool Kelz T in the original concept. It was T-Money.
Yeah, it was T-Money.
And
in
you
the original
were Dr.
concept.
Dre. When we got signed to Def Jam. That's what happened with original concept.
That's the part I'm trying to get to. We only got like 40 minutes on here, so we can't tell.
I know. We can talk about
some of it for the book. So let's go from the concept crew to original concept. You were saying there was a lot of different dudes in the concept crew. How did y'all narrow that down to original concept?
Because you always need it. As you just said, you need people to help carry the equipment. So all the crew really did was carry the equipment. So eventually, T and I, we got some equipment. We got some real speakers. I got these things called J.M. Moore speakers. T had this other speaker. I think it was Shure speakers, T.
Yeah, Shure speakers. And then we built a pair.
We built a pair of speakers. Then we made a whole section. And next thing you know, we were the concept. Because I went to my science teacher, Mr. Corbett, and I said, what would be a good idea for a group name, the concept, for a logo? And he kept going, aha, and pointing to his head. And we came with this logo as a lightning bolt going through a light bulb. And we made a big, giant, like, not a poster. What would you call that, T?
Step and repeat or a backdrop?
It was a big backdrop. We made that way before people were doing it today. You know, we had a big backdrop with the logo on the front of it. It was crazy.
Okay.
And then T's father built the coffin, and we used the coffin, painted it black, and we were the first ones around the area walking around with two turntables and the mixer in this coffin.
Let's keep it 100, because we got that idea from Keith Shockley and Bomb Squad, because they had
coffin. We got that idea from Music Mind. Music Mind.
I remember it as we got it from Keith and them, because they had a coffin. Their coffin was sick. They had let me tell you something. They had the coffin with the barricade already around it, the lights show. They were ridiculous, man. But anyway.
Come on, son. Now, this may be hard to believe, y'all, but I am not a morning person. I know. I run a morning show in Chicago. I know on the weekends I'm on the radio in Atlanta in the morning. Everything that I do, I usually do in the morning. Literally all of my business get handled right around sunrise. But you know what? There's one place that has the power to turn me into a morning person, and that is McDonald's. Something about the smell of hash browns in one hand while cuffing my bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit ever so gently in the other as I smother it in grape jelly, that gives me the boost I need to conquer the day. The mix of sweet and savory plus a big old swig of orange juice to wash it all down is my true definition of eating good. So if you're like me, struggling to push through the morning Order ahead on the app and stop by your local McDonald's today and get that early a.m. dose of delicious you need to help you defeat the morning sleepies. App download and registration required. If you're looking for an adventure with the family, NerdWallet can help you take the first steps towards making your dream a reality. Start earning points towards a much-deserved trip by using NerdWallet to compare and find credit cards that pack big travel rewards. Because why not turn everyday purchases into an unforgettable experience? And maybe that vacation made you realize you're ready for a place with a bit more space. NerdWallet can help you compare rates to find the smartest mortgage lender for you. And now that you're feeling settled in your new home, wouldn't it be nice to spend less time watching your investments and more time with family? NerdWallet can help you compare and find financial advisors to take the lead on expanding your portfolio while you take the lead on fort building. Whatever you're dreaming of, NerdWallet makes it easy to compare the smartest financial products side by side. Compare and find the smartest financial products for you on NerdWallet. NerdWallet is not an investment advisor nor an investment broker. Information is for educational purposes only. Have you ever seen a vitamin water display at your local store? It's like walking into an actual rainbow. Is it me or are the flavors of vitamin water insanely attractive? Plus, with titles like Energy, Revive, Focus, Refresh, Essential, Power C, and Triple X, it's easy to pick a flavor to match your vibe. The real flex is flavor. Don't forget to check out the newest flavors, Gutsy Watermelon Peach and Look Blueberry Hibiscus.
Come on, son. What the fuck is the deal? Come on, son.
But let's moving jump forward into original concept.
Original and concept.
That name, right. From the concept to original concept, we were on the air at WBAU at Adelphi University with Mr. Bill Stephanie, with Hank Shockley, Wizard KJ, Keith Shockley, yeah. Butch Cassidy, and of course, Chucky D, aka Chuck D, and the one and only MC DJ Flavor Flav.
Flavor Flav.
Yeah, and we were doing radio on Saturdays, Sundays, and Mondays at BAU. And we started doing these radio promos called It's Great to Be Here, which eventually became Can You Feel It? Then we did this crazy radio promo called Knowledge Me by the Most Illinest B-Boys. And I got a chance to meet Rick Rubin, and I started playing him some of the groups that we were playing at BAU. And he just loved Knowledge Me. He thought it was hysterical. And from there, we signed as the group The Concept to be on Def Jam.
Okay, so original concept got signed to Def Jam. Do you remember exactly how much money each one of y'all walked away with off that contract?
Nothing.
There was no upfront money?
Yeah, we did. But we had to pay to the lawyer to negotiate the contract.
Yeah, we didn't get a lot of money.
We got $1,000 and he billed us $999.75.
Let me tell you something back then. Dre, excuse me. Let me tell you back then, you didn't get a lot of money for upfront money. There was no upfront money. We were happy. We were young. We were happy to get a deal. You know, we were on Def Jam. I mean, keep in mind, LL was coming after us. You know, Beasties were there. Tila Rock was there. You know, we were just happy to have a deal. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was good. You know
this is just so, early Def Jam days before.
Yeah, we were signed as the group. Concept, though, Ed. We weren't signed as original concept. There was another group that came out when I was pressing Rick. We need to put this record out. And we saw this record called The Concept because we were in a DJ pool. So I saw tons and tons and tons of records all the time. And I said, dude, we got to put this out. So it was MCA, the late MCA from the Beastie Boys, who said, well, you guys should be original concept.
Yep, and he named it original concept.
I really hated it. I said it doesn't make sense, but it stuck.
Yeah, it absolutely stuck. And how long were you guys signed to Def Jam before that deal washed away? Were you still signed when we started Yo MTV Raps?
Yes,
yeah,
still
absolutely.
Signed.
Absolutely.
Matter of fact, when we did Yo MTV Raps, we had just came back from Europe on the Don't Wear Your Good Clothes tour because we just released the first album straight from the basement of Cooley High.
We took Latifah out on our first tour. Her,
yes.
DJ Mark, the 45 King, they were out with us.
And who else, who else was on that tour?
Sugar Bear.
From EU?
No, Sugar Bear from Queens.
From Queens.
Okay, I don't think I know this Sugar Bear. Maybe
yeah,
I need
Sugar
to
Sugar Bear from Queens. He had a record out. And
Don't Can't Lie Is Mine.
Now, Ed, here's a bit of history that you may not know. Guess who opened for us in England on this tour?
Moni.
Well, no, we met Moni there.
We met Moni.
I'll give you a good hint. South Bronx. South Bronx.
The
South
Mighty Carers won?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Yep. He opened, and the crazy thing was, he came out and he tore the place down. And we looked at each other and we said, nah, we ain't going out like that. And we came out and did a show and tore the place down. And we're like, wow. And it made him go, man, you guys, because I had interviewed Chris and Scott LaRock at BAU. And that's how I knew them. And when he saw us do, they said, I didn't know you guys got down like that. He said, yeah, man, we get down.
So when you guys were at Def Jam before Public Enemy?
Yeah.
Yes, I got Public Enemy signed to Def Jam because while I was DJing with the Beastie Boys and we were going on and doing gigs with that, we would do tape battles. They would play Aerosmith, Led Zeppelin, and I would play all these BAU groups. And they heard Public Enemy number one, which was a BAU promo. Because Chuck got mad because we were doing a gig one time and the guy came to stick us up at Rockville Center. Remember that, T?
Yep.
So sure when Chuck got mad, he went back and put it down on the pad. He gave everybody something that, you know, you never had. So he went back in the studio with Keith and they came with Public Enemy number one. And okay. That was a BAU promo.
That was a WBAU promo.
Okay, yeah, so WBAU promo.
Before let's jump fast forward a little bit and start talking about the show that changed all of our lives. The show called Yo MTV Raps. Dre, how did you get connected to Peter to become one of the people that was considered for Yo MTV Raps?
I knew Peter back in the Beastie Boys days because Peter was always hanging out with us. When I was DJing gigs for them, I would always see Peter there and he would always talk to us, but I didn't know Peter worked at MTV.
Okay.
So when I came back from the Raising Hell tour with Run DMC, I was DJing at a party for a guy named Beaver and Jessica, what's the woman's name? Jessica Rosenblum. And Peter came up to me and he said, hey, Dre, how you doing? And my good late friend Ozzy was with me. And he said, you see this thing called Yo MTV Raps? And at that time, they had just done the pilot. And I think they did one or two episodes with Fab. And he said, would you mind coming to the office? I want to talk to you about it. So he gave me his card. And Peter's card, the only thing that made it stand out to me, it said MTV, but it had this shamrock on it. So I kind of laughed and said, well, this guy's not from MTV. I don't believe it. So I used to work at Rhythm Method Management, which was at the time Public Enemy, Red Alert, and Original Concepts Management. I showed Ron Spola, our attorney.
Queen Latifah was there too.
Excuse me?
Queen Latifah was there too. She was managed by Ron Spola. He had a whole list of people.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember him.
My good friend, Dave, the late great Dave Funkenklein, was there. We used to sit by this counter and, you know, work. So I asked Ron, do you think I should call him? And I called Peter, and MTV was right around the corner from Rhythm Method. So I walked to the office with my Def Jam jacket on, trying to be impressive. And Peter invited me in. But the first thing I saw, and Ed, you can attest to this, when you first walked into MTV in those days, I walked up on the floor, and the first thing I looked for was black people. And I kept looking around, and I kept looking. And I saw these two black guys. Well, really one was a Latin guy. And I assumed the other guy was black. And they were emptying garbage cans. I said, oh, well, I know I'm not going to be working here. So that's how I met Peter.
Did you and Peter sit down and discuss what they were looking for you on TV Raps?
Yeah, for a long time. I went back about two or three times when we started. Because I remember I was working right around the corner. So Peter would invite me to lunch and say, hey man, come on up, let's talk. But we were talking more about Beastie Boys stuff. And he said, well, what do you think about this Yo MTV Raps thing? And I said, you know, I think Fab is okay. But I said, but it needs some segments that are gonna be a little, you know, it should be a little lively, a little fun. And he said, well, okay, well, you think you can do it? You think you can show me what you're talking about? And I said, yeah, I could do that. And I said, you know, I got a guy, you know, we worked in television and film goes to NYU, no, NY, and New York Institute of Technology. And when we do this all the time, and I'm, you know, just lying my butt off. And he said, okay, well, let me see you do it. So right then and then you put on the spot. So I came back and I told T about it. I said, we got to shoot something. So we skull searching together and came up with this idea to do things about haircuts at a barbershop. So we went back to Reverend Jackson's barbershop in Hempstead. It was in Hempstead, right, T?
Yes, it was.
And we went to do it, and I forgot who was supposed to be in the chair to do the talking part. And he didn't show up.
He never showed up. Peter came out.
Uh-huh.
He never showed up. I forgot who it was.
He never showed up. So Peter said, come on, guys, I got to go. So I jumped in the chair, and I did the segment, and T shot the segment. Peter took the tape and went back to MTV. He called me on Monday. He said, can you come in? I want to talk to you. I come in, and he says, hey, man, what would you think about hosting your own TV Raps? I said, what? He said, yeah, what do you think about it? I said, but you got Fab. What are you talking about? And I remember the Run DMC pilot episode from the Nassau Coliseum, because I'm on stage wearing that Def Jam jacket introducing Public Enemy. And I said, are you for real? He said, yeah, why don't you think about it? So I went back and I talked to Chuck, T, Keith, Hank, and everybody said, well, what do you think? You think I should do this? And everyone said, nah, man, I don't know. It's MTV. They don't really have any Black people on there. But I wanted to meet Downtown Julie Brown, and I didn't care anything about it. I just wanted to meet her, you know, in person. So Chuck was sitting behind the desk at 510 South Franklin. He said, Dre, go ahead, man. What we got to lose?
Team, what did you first hear about your MTV Raps, and what did you think?
Well, I heard about it, you know, to piggyback over Dre's experience. I heard about this show from him. Mm-hmm. And then when I realized that he was going to be actually hosting the show, you know, I as you know very well, I went up to MTV with him most of the time. You know, when you guys were shooting early, I was behind, you know, behind the scenes, seeing what was going to happen, because at the time, they picked Dre, and they were actually coupling him with you. So I was like, okay, you know, because myself and Dre, we did everything together. We were in the city together. We DJed together. We did record pool runs together. You know, we did this whole, you know, we were in a group together. So it was, honestly, initially, it was kind of awkward. You understand? It was kind of awkward, because it was like, okay, now Dre's doing this, and he's doing it with somebody else, you know? Like the scorned woman, like, oh shit, man, you got somebody else, motherfucker.
Right. I had heard you guys' show on BAU a few times, because it was kind of crazy. God, we only got 10 minutes left, guys. Kind of crazy, but you know, I've never met you guys before. You know what I mean? I met Dre. I remember meeting you, Dre, when I came in to talk to actually do something on tape with Ted. That's the first time I met you. And then Ted brought Dre and I in the office, and I was asking Dre about his background. He was like, yeah, I'm Jamaican. And I remember we did the Jamaican thing on tape.
We Ted had those Jamaican wigs on his hat
or
the coat rack.
Right, and we put the Jamaican wigs on, and we did something on tape. And Ted had the foresight to take it back to MTV and say, yo, I want to do something different than Fab. Fab was like, you know, y'all know, Fab was by himself on the road all the time. They wanted to do a studio
and
show.
That's the way he liked it.
He wanted to do the kind of studio show. Laurel and Hardy type of thing. And we lasted for a long time. And since I only got 10 minutes left with you guys on the Zoom, and I would love to do a part two of this, I'll ask you this. If you look back on it, Dre, what's your favorite memory of your own TV Raps?
I have the whole thing. Because at Yo MTV Raps, for me, was the televised version of what we were doing at BAU. And one of the best experiences of my life in entertainment was meeting you. And us, I'll never forget walking down the hall and seeing you sit there, and you had the blonde in your hair with the Gumby haircut. And I said, oh crap, I'll never make it on MTV now. There's a skinny Black guy. He's going to get the job. And then I went in to do audition tape with Ted and walked back down to Peter's office. And then that's when Ted called us both in. our greatest experiences. I think everything we did, we took so many chances. And the one thing I have to say, we were blessed doing all three of us. We said we were not going to change who we were to be on MTV. And that's what made it so successful.
Absolutely. So
it's hard to point at like James Brown, Tupac, Pam Grier, Howard Stern, Mel Gibson, Brown. Shaquille right. O'Neal, right. Bobby Brown, and say, oh, those were the greatest moments. Sometimes yep. some of the greatest Yo MTV Mel rap Gibson, shows Luke was Gossett. Just us on the set and yeah. the Numinator.
Carol King, T-Money, how about you, my brother?
You know, up to be honest with you, this is going to sound really corny, but what Dre said, you know, ditto. The whole experience was life-changing for me, to be quite honest with you. And I would have never changed anything. I wouldn't change anything that happened. I mean, we work very well together, man. And, you know, me and Dre have been friends since fifth grade, and I gained another brother through Ed. You know, like I say every time when I get interviewed for these podcasts and radio shows, I say, you know, you would think that me and Dre would always hang out when we go on the road, but I wound up hanging out with you more than I hung out with Dre. Like, you were like my second brother, man. And real talk, the experience was, you know, was life-changing, man. I wouldn't have changed it for the world.
Can I jump in just one quick second before you hang up?
Yeah, go ahead, Dre.
One of the best, craziest experiences when you and Ted convinced me to paint a number one on my belly for our first spring break. And you lied to me. You said, come on, Trey. I already talked to Julie Brown for you. You good, man. You win. Just do this. And we all going to blow up. That was
spring break, brother.
That first spring break.
And spring break was special, I think, to all of us, because you guys remember Bethune-Cookman College, those black kids weren't coming to spring break at all because they felt like it was nothing for them. If you guys remember, we went and we had the flyers made up, and we took those flyers and we plastered it all around that college, and they had never seen that many black people. I think that was the first year we was doing Yo MTV Raps live from spring break. And they had never seen
that many. Oh, that was when we went to Daytona Beach.
That's right.
Yeah.
We went from the Texarkana, and we went to the Marriott, I think, at that time.
Yeah.
And that was the first one.
But listen, for real talk, if I have to pick one particular instance that I thought was like the most incredible instance, I think the day that I came out as the real Michael Jackson, and neither one of you knew what was happening.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing stuff for me too.
And he wrote the hilarious. Real on the back of his
with the 8-track hanging off the rope. Man,
that was the funniest shit ever.
Funny.
That was absolutely hilarious, man. So many great memories. If you guys could have had one wish for Yo MTV Raps, something that didn't happen, what would your wish have been?
For it never to be canceled. You know, we could have went on for another 10 years, you know?
How about you, Dre?
The one wish I had for Yo MTV Raps is that we should have done a movie called the Yo MTV Raps movie with a whole bunch of clips and artists and just what we did behind the scenes before the internet came into play. Because Yo MTV Raps was an international hit. We changed the world with Yo MTV Raps. We went to St. Petersburg, Russia with Salt and Pepper.
Right.
Yo MTV Raps.
That's right.
People in African nations and in Japan and in Australia learned how to speak English from Yo MTV Raps.
We saw one black person in Russia, one black person.
I think I like to echo T's sentiment. My biggest regret is that I wanted to hit that 10-year mark, because I feel like if we'd have hit that 10-year mark, we'd have did something special. But at the time, you know, hip hop had started infiltrating MTV on a daily basis. And they did it that way for a number of reasons. We know the reasons. We ain't got to delve too deep into it, because, you know, hanging around any further than that, they'd have had to pay big bucks to all of us. So
that's right.
What I mean? So they nipped it in the bud. They made a business decision, but for me, I just wish we could have lasted 10 years would have been great.
But we were the greatest influence on MTV at that time. We had a show called The Show.
Yes.
We created, you name it.
Which became The Daily Show.
Anything that you and I were on and participated with us, it became a huge hit on MTV. We met Adam Sandler when he was on Remote Control.
Yes, sir.
And all them characters. We met Ben Stiller. What's the guy's name?
Colin
Dennis
Quinn.
Leary.
Colin Quinn. Yeah.
Colin Quinn.
Dennis Leary. Early.
Everybody came Leary. Through us. And the thing is, as you said, that decade mark would have been very significant. But to be honest with you, we went a decade plus because our blessings got past Young TV Raps and we went on to do an incredible morning show in New York radio history. Again, before there was Instagram, Facebook,
TikTok,
and all the internet stuff.
And we were all there, man. Well, gentlemen, we're running out of time. I thank you. Can we do a part two of this very soon?
Yes, absolutely. We're going to turn the interview on you.
Nah, man, it's Come On now. Son, the podcast. So I'm the one that's, I've been blessed to know you guys for a long time. And I felt like, you know what? Do I want to turn this thing on and just talk, or do I want to interview these guys? And I'm glad I had the opportunity to interview you. There's a lot of great stuff that I wish we could have got to. There's a lot of great Public Enemy stories and Beastie Boys stories I want to hear from you guys. I didn't really get to the dissolvement of Original Concept and your beef with Def Jam and everything else, because a lot of stuff behind the scenes that a lot of people don't get to see, you know, and they didn't get to see. We didn't really get to talk about us programming your MTV Raps and how that got taken out of our hands and the real reason behind that. You know, we could get woke on them real quick if we want to. So I guess when we come back, man, you guys let me know when you got time and we'll do this again, man. And thank y'all so much for being on my 200th episode of Come On.
Thank you, Ed. Congratulations. Thank you, Ed, for making us certified.
Thank you. Y'all already know it's love, man. T-Money, I thank you so much. My brother, T450, the full effect. Documentary.
Documentary, that's right. Look out for that.
Look out for the documentary. Don't forget, that's coming real, real soon. T, Dre, I love you so much, brother.
Love you too, man. We're still certified, brother.
Yes, we are. Don't forget the TV show Certified. That's coming too. We ain't gave up on that joint yet.
All right, guys.
All right, brothers. Thank y'all so much, man. The 200th episode right here in your face. Come on, son. Love y'all, bro.
Thank you.
Come on, son. That's my shit.
This Ed Lover podcast is being done in conjunction with Cigars International. Make sure you check out CigarsInternational.com for all your cigar needs.
This episode of Come On Son, the podcast, is produced, engineered, and edited by Cam Quotes and Krista Hayes. Recorded out of Atlanta, Georgia, this is an official Loudspeakers Network podcast brought to you by Ed Lover. Be sure to check out the return of Come On Son, the web series, exclusively on Patreon.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.